What's your favorite scary movie?
Welcome to 13 Degrees of Screams,
where we watch and dissect your favorite spooky movies.
I'm your host, Alex.
And Stephanie.
And this is a mostly horror podcast.
This week, we get possessed by Bathsheba in The Conjuring.
So, Stephanie.
Yeah.
Have you seen The Conjuring before you watched it for the podcast?
You know, I thought I had.
Oh.
But I had not.
Oh, boy.
No, I confused Conjuring with Haunting in Connecticut, I think. Yeah.
Not quite.
No, not the same. And I was like, oh.
I'm in danger.
I'm in danger, girl. I have no idea what's going on here.
Did it start and you're like,
it's definitely not this. Yeah.
This is not what I thought it was.
Yeah, yeah. This isn't a kid, like a teenage boy moving into a house.
No.
This is all girls.
It's five girls.
Yeah.
It's the complete opposite of one boy.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think then?
I liked it. It was all right.
Just I?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's stupid to play hide and seek blindfolded in a house you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. There's a lot of hide and seek in these movies that we've been watching.
I love how that was your takeaway.
Yeah.
Just don't.
Don't do that.
Don't do hide and seek with a blindfold. I mean, that's fair.
I was like waiting for her to fall down the stairs.
Who, any of them?
All, yeah, all of them.
Each
all of
girl,
them, one after another, fall down the stairs.
There's a pile of children at the bottom of the steps.
Yes.
Oh my God, we should not have done that. The mom did say, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't care.
But she did it too. Like she did it with the little girl.
It was, you know, it was a couple of days after. They know the house now, right?
No.
Okay, never mind. My bad. You're right. I'm wrong. So you thought it was just aight?
No, I liked it.
You liked it?
Yeah, yeah. Do you like it?
I do.
Oh, okay.
Is
this like a favorite of yours?
I think it used to be. I was real into it when I first saw it, which we saw in theaters. I saw in Pennsylvania, funny enough.
Oh, okay.
Because I saw this with Charlie and Tyler from BTB.
Ooh.
We talk about them all the time.
I know.
We
name drop.
I know. We've said that Charlie is your husband, right, on the podcast before?
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure because we bring him up.
Either that or I have multiple Charlies in my life because I would say like Charlie said this was funny or something. And
yeah. Okay. I just want to make sure.
Whenever I refer to Charlie, it's Charlie from BTB.
Charlie
everyone.
From BTB. But we saw it when it came out. And we ended up coming later to when I would normally go to the movies, and the only seats open were like the front row.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I've ever seen a movie in the front row.
Oh, God.
And it was not a great experience.
Ah, yeah.
Not because it was like any scarier, but just looking up.
Yeah. It does things
hours.
To your neck. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, why would anyone sit here? But I really enjoyed it when I first saw it. And I will say the ending did freak me out a little bit. It did scare me a little bit.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
Maybe because I was so close. But
no, yeah, that's fair.
It did freak me out, which leads me to why this is our 13th movie in our season.
Mm-hmm.
It was ranked 13. Do you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
Are you sure?
Yeah, let me just look through everything else again real quick. Ooh,
Stephanie has no idea what
perusing.
We did.
Perusing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah, I would say Strangers comes right after it.
Strangers? For me. Okay, I can see that.
Or Shining, maybe.
Really? Shining?
I think Shining would be like a 10 at least.
For sure. Okay. For me, yeah, this is still the scariest movie out of all the ones we did. I will say with each time I rewatch it, I found myself kind of not paying attention here and there. It's a longer movie. I think it's like almost 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. There's some things that I feel like could get cut out of the movie at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I still enjoy it. I think it's a good 10.
Yeah. I just don't understand why everyone... Like, this was the same issue we had in The Changeling, too. Like, if you find a room behind a hidden wall or something like that, they boarded that up for a reason. They don't want you down there.
They didn't think about it.
They're like, let's just go down there and take care of the furnace. Like, what?
So my question with that is, do they not think they had a base?
Did they not think they had access to a furnace before? They were just like, yep, sometimes you don't get to.
Even though there's very clearly like basement windows that right. You can see, they're like, well, there's no actual basement.
That's
that must
not
be
for you.
That's the house's basement. You have to ask permission to go down there.
Right.
And they did not because they just fell into the hole.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's silly, Stephanie.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that.
I just feel like you shouldn't do that. Don't go in mysterious rooms that are boarded off.
I'll just board it back up. Yeah, I don't need to go like down there. It's the house, like I said.
Yeah.
Are you ready to hear some movie background?
Yes.
The Conjuring, released in 2013, is an American supernatural horror film that marks the beginning of the Conjuring Universe franchise. Directed by James Wan and written by Chad Hayes and Carrie W. Hayes, the movie stars Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga as Ed and Lorraine Warren, paranormal investigators known for their involvement in prominent haunting cases. The film is based on the Warrens' real-life reports, which also inspired the Amityville horror story and franchise. In the movie, the Warrens assist the Perrin family, who are experiencing disturbing events in their newly occupied farmhouse in Rhode Island in 1971. Development of the film started in January 2012, with Wan confirmed as the director of a film initially titled The Warren Files, later changed to The Conjuring. Production took place in Wilmington, North Carolina, with scenes shot in chronological order. The film was released in the United States and Canada on July 19, 2013, receiving positive reviews from critics for its performances, direction, screenplay, atmosphere, and musical score. It grossed over $319 million worldwide against a $20 million budget. In preparation for the roles, Farmiga and Wilson spent time with Lorraine Warren in Connecticut and observed her mannerisms and style. Over the course of spending 3 days at the Warren home, both actors took in information that could not otherwise be achieved from secondary research. After observing Lorraine, Farmiga stated, "I just wanted to absorb her essence. I wanted to see the details. She has such mad style. I just wanted to see the way she communicates with her hands, these gestures, her smile, how she moves through space." The production of The Conjuring was not without controversy. The previous owners of the house on which the film is based sued the filmmakers in 2015, claiming that their property was being constantly vandalized as a consequence of the film. They alleged various invasions and the discovery of objects affiliated with satanic cults. So they found that stuff in the house.
Mm.
Allegedly. Apparently.
Ah.
I guess.
Oopsie.
Another lawsuit was filed by Gerald Brittle, the author of the 1980 book The Demonologist about Ed and Lorraine Warren, who claimed that the film and its sequels infringed upon the exclusive contract with the Warrens. Both lawsuits were eventually settled, and the success of the film led to the creation of a successful horror franchise, which covers like The Nun and Annabelle and all those sequels and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, there's so many.
So many. There are.
So many sequels. There's like
seven, I think, altogether.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
The Conjuring has an 86% on Rotten Tomatoes with a critical consensus that states, "Well-crafted and gleefully creepy, The Conjuring ratchets up dread through a series of effective old-school scares."
Gleefully creepy. I like that description.
It is gleefully creepy.
Just like imagine someone like,
that's me
like
watching horror movies.
Like,
I love geese. It's my favorite scary movie. Yes.
Alex watching horror movies is gleefully creepy.
Look at them being murdered.
Yay, my favorite part.
I love when the head gets decapitated.
More decapitation. Are you ready to go into the plot?
Yes.
In 1968, renowned demonologist Ed and Lorraine Warren are investigating the Annabelle case, in which friends Debbie and Camilla say they have a possessed doll.
Likely story.
Yeah.
It's always a doll.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I was like, people going into this must have been like, it's all about this doll, right? Like,
you'd think.
Yeah.
They set it up to be, but.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
They explained that after they contacted a medium, they allowed the spirit who claimed to be a 7-year-old girl named Annabelle Higgins, who died in the apartment, to possess the doll. Unable to get rid of the doll as the hauntings became more disturbing, Debbie and Camilla decided to desperately reach out to the Warrens. The Warrens then explain how the doll was never really possessed and was a conduit for a demonic spirit that manipulated Debbie and Camilla so that it would eventually take over one of their bodies.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
That is really scary, though.
Mm-hmm.
Anything with demons. I'm sure I said this before. Anything with demons.
Right.
No.
Gotta get as far away as possible.
No. It's funny, though, because they show what Annabelle did, and it's just like crayons, like all scribbled. I'm like, not crayons on the wall. Eek.
And I love when they put her in a dumpster right after that. I'm like, certainly she can't get out of there.
Right. Well, I mean,
she can crawl and color on the wall, but not out of a dumpster.
Right. I know. Right. Mm-mm. I would have burned it. It would have been gone. Have you ever seen the real life Annabelle?
Yeah, I think I've seen images. It's like a Raggedy Ann doll. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just a Raggedy Ann. Just a Raggedy Ann.
Yeah.
But it looks nothing like this Annabelle.
Yeah.
Like, why?
Which is odd.
I mean, they just try to make it scary looking.
Yeah. I guess if they had to use a Raggedy Ann doll, they would have to like draw little like pointed down eyebrows or something on her little yarny face.
Yeah.
My grandma had a Raggedy Ann with like its counterpart or something. It's like Raggedy, I don't know, John or something.
Raggedy Andy.
Oh, yes. Yes. Fun facts. They weren't scary.
No. But could you imagine like seeing that doll, like the Annabelle in this movie, and be like, I want that doll.
No.
Like that. That's something I want to own.
Not even under the assumption that it's not possessed.
No, I just don't want that thing.
Yeah, no. It's ugly.
Exactly.
It's an ugly doll.
Get that thing. Put that thing back where it came from. So help me. So help me.
So help me. So help me.
I did want to talk about really quick when we were kind of testing out the podcast, we covered Annabelle in one of our test episodes.
Yes.
So we did see one of the Annabelle movies.
Well, wasn't it Annabelle Creation, technically? It was like the origin story of Annabelle. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just saying we did watch one of the Annabelle movies.
We did.
It was pretty good. I thought it was fun.
I liked it. Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, fun fact.
We can release it as a lost episode.
Yeah, maybe. If you want to hear an episode of us testing out the podcast. What movie we did? Annabelle? One of the Annabelles, Oculus, and Christine.
Yes.
Fun, fun. Good times, good times.
They were. 3 years later in 1971, Roger and Carolyn Perrin move into a farmhouse in Harrisville, Rhode Island, with their five daughters, Andrea, Nancy, Christine, Cindy, and April. And I always thought there was four, and then eventually we'd see another girl, and I'd be like, who's this?
Who that?
Who this girl?
I thought there were two, and then there were three, and then all of a sudden there's four, and then there was five!
Yeah, like the second youngest and middle child, there wasn't a lot of screen time, I think, for them individually, so sometimes it just felt like they morphed into one child.
Yeah, I think really Christine and then April were like the two main ones, I would think?
I guess so.
Which is weird. What happened to Cindy? They're like, bye.
Cindy's not important now.
No, which is weird because she's the second youngest. And when we get to the end, that matters.
Yeah, but otherwise you don't really see her.
Okay, yeah, Christine and April are the main ones. Yeah, and like,
fuck the two old girls.
Yeah.
No one needs them.
Nancy gets a bad, I think it's Nancy.
Yeah.
With the hair.
Yeah, I think so.
That sucks. But anyways. There's a lot of girls, and they don't all matter. Let's just put it that way.
Yes. Their dog, Sadie, refuses to enter the house. And I was like, you go back home with that dog to wherever you came from.
If a dog is refusing to go anywhere, you're like, all right, you're right.
And then you're looking out your bedroom window like, good night, Sadie, as she's like barking out the window like, please, don't do it.
Turn around.
Yeah, poor Sadie. Poor Sadie knew.
She knew. And they did not listen. And honestly, that's on them.
Yeah.
This is their fault, really. Mm-hmm. They should have known.
A minor mishap during a game of hide and seek results in the discovery of the boarded up entrance to an unknown cellar. Paranormal events occur within the first few nights. Every clock in the house stops at 3:07 a.m. Carolyn awakens with additional large bruises every morning. One day, Sadie is found dead in the yard. Yeah, she bit the biscuit.
Bit the biscuit. I've never heard that term before.
I just made it up.
Oh, no, Stephanie.
But it makes me sad because I left. She was so cute.
I was too slow. I texted you. I'm like, wait.
I've already seen.
I was like, no, the dog died.
That should be a rule. You don't kill the dog. If anything, like, let's make a final dog movie. Like, you don't need to have the final girl live. Like, let's have the final dog.
Right. Well, every dog needs to be the final dog.
Yes.
So, just I guess by default.
That's true.
Because if you say final dog, that implies there's dogs don't make it.
Yes.
So, we can't have a final dog.
I just want the dog in the movie to be the final girl. Let's say it that way. Like,
there
if there's like a group of kids getting chased by a killer with a dog, final dog is final girl. Carolyn and Christine both encounter a malevolent spirit. Carolyn contacts the Warrens, who meet with her and agree to conduct an initial investigation, during which Lorraine, a clairvoyant, sees that dark forces have latched onto the Perrin family.
It's over.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately. Yeah. She knows something's up.
The thing is, they ask Carolyn about the bruises, and she's like, oh, just a vitamin deficiency. I'm taking some meds for it. And I'm like, bitch, you know. Just tell her.
Yeah.
Just tell her.
They're here for this one reason.
Mm-hmm. Unless... And they've already told her everything else. Like, why not tell her if you're getting a bruise each day, that's not normal?
Unless she doesn't think it's paranormal related. I don't know.
I just feel like once they figure it out, it's very... obvious, and then Carolyn's the last to know. Like, everyone else knows what's going on with Carolyn before Carolyn does.
At the very end.
Yeah.
When she's floating around, she's like, what's happening?
It's like, my vitamin. Like, Carolyn, you're possessed. Like,
no, it's just my vitamin deficiency.
Can you go get the pills? They're in the bathroom.
I guess. Yeah. Mm. I don't know. I thought maybe she just didn't put two and two together.
I don't know. I guess so. But I'm just saying, if you're paranormal investigators, you should know.
Yeah, just, oh, like you're saying the Warren should know?
Oh, yeah, Warren should have told her.
Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying. I thought you meant Carolyn should have known.
Oh, no, not Carolyn.
Oh, okay. I was like
Carolyn's justified to believe, I guess, but.
Oh, yeah. They're like,
until the thing splits blood in her mouth. Then you got to be suspicious.
Right. Okay, I see what you're saying. I thought you meant, Carolyn, you dumbass, you should have known that you're being abused by a ghost.
No. I would say the Warren should be like, hey, by the way, we told you that we saw a shadow thing attached to your husband's back and behind your kids. Eh, we'll keep the bruise thing to ourselves.
Right.
That doesn't seem related.
See, I still think it's Carolyn's fault because when I get a bruise, I just assume it's a ghost. So if you get a mysterious bruise and you don't know how you got it, like, just to be safe, assume it's an evil entity. And then that way...
You're prepared.
You're prepared. So what is inevitably a demon trying to possess you?
Yeah, exactly.
You're just preemptively being prepared.
Ready, you know, for that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like, if you have a bruise, just assume it's the worst.
Okay, fair enough.
If you take anything from this episode.
Yes.
Mysterious bruises equal ghost.
You've learned. She explains that leaving the house will not free them. To gather evidence, they place cameras and bells around the house with the help of their assistant, Drew Thomas, and the police officer, Brad Hamilton.
These two people that, they're there, but
they
also
have no clue what they're doing there.
Yeah, random guy A and random guy B.
Yes, I had no idea who they really were. I know. Or really their names.
Look, I forgot. Like I said, I was kind of like losing focus throughout this movie. I'm like, who's that guy again? Why? What are they doing? They're just helping. Okay.
Yeah. Extras. Essentially extras.
It's hard to get good help, so mm-hmm. You just get the unknowns.
Further research reveals that the house once belonged to an accused witch named Bathsheba Sherman, who sacrificed her week-old baby to the devil and killed herself in 1863 at 3:07 in the morning after proclaiming her love of Satan and cursing all who take her land. You know, she just did everything. Like, wake up early, kill the baby. Like, she had a whole list.
Yeah, she just did the most. I texted you how extra she is.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, right. She's so dramatic. Like, she's like, notice me.
Right.
Pick me, girl.
And not only did she kill her baby and kill herself, she's like, by the way, anyone that takes this land, like, also a problem.
Lady, you're dead.
You can't have it all.
She really tried. She's like, even in death, this is mine.
Yes. There are reports of numerous murders and suicides through the years in the houses that were built on the property. One morning, Bathsheba appears to Carolyn and fully possesses her.
As one does.
Yeah.
So matter of fact, one day she just decided, Carolyn, I'm possessing.
Today's the day.
Prepare thyself. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, she, like, crawls on top of her and, like, basically throws up in her mouth. And then Carolyn does some throwing up. And we're like, okay, Carolyn, not going to mention that at all. I guess no. She was completely taken over already.
Yeah. I mean, how else are you going to possess somebody, you know?
Yeah.
That's how it's done.
I don't know. I always picture it kind of like ghosts, like you go into the person, you know, and then you're like, ha, I'm here.
No, a little puke will do.
Yeah. Is that the recipe for it?
Straight vomit.
Just a little puke.
Yeah. That's all you need. You never tried?
No, I haven't possessed anyone.
Well, later tonight. Charlie's in trouble.
It'll be unexpected.
I would hope so. He's waiting at home. I hope Stephanie pukes in my mouth tonight.
Well, I gotta gear him up for it. I gotta give him some bruises first.
Smack him around a little bit.
Like, shut his hand in a drawer a couple of times or something to see.
It was a ghost. I don't know what to tell you.
That's definitely a ghost. That night, the group hears a spirit luring Cindy into the wardrobe where she reveals a secret passage. Everything in this house, by the way, leads to the basement. Like, oh, this cover leads to the basement. Like,
all roads lead to the basement. Yeah,
hole in the wall leads to the basement. The bathtub leads to the basement. Lorraine enters the passage and falls down to the cellar basement, where she sees the spirit of a woman whom Bathsheba had possessed long ago and used to kill her child.
Bro.
Yeah.
Stop.
Right.
Just because you killed your kid doesn't mean you could just go ahead.
Yeah, that's not fair.
No. You made that choice. Mm-hmm. They didn't make this choice.
Right. Maybe they had other intentions for their child.
Right. Like, who knows?
Right.
Like, letting them live.
Yeah.
Novel concept.
Right. Crazy.
Who would have thought?
Bathsheba attacks Nancy. The incident is caught on camera. The Warrens conclude it is sufficient evidence to receive authorization from the Catholic Church to perform an exorcism.
Thank God. And just the attacking Nancy, that's putting it lightly.
Mm-hmm.
This bitch drags her by her hair all around the room.
And no one can catch her.
They're like, Nancy, come back.
They're all just kind of like standing in a circle, just like, Nancy.
Well, Nancy's like literally bouncing around the room by her hair.
Hitting walls and shit.
It's like in Matilda when they hold the girl by the pigtails and swings her around.
Yes.
That's Nancy.
Yes, that's Nancy.
But instead of, is it the trench bull who does it to her?
Yes, and then she like swings her out the window. Like,
yeah. So over the gate. It's basically two different demons, but you know.
Yeah, trench bull is definitely Bathsheba.
She's demonic.
Father Gordon explains that approval would have to come directly from the Vatican because the Perrin family are not members of the Catholic Church. Like, bitch. Like, maybe they'll be members after.
Right.
After you help them.
This sounds like an advertisement opportunity, does it not?
Right.
It's like,
come join our church. We'll save your house and your livelihood from whatever demon's possessing you.
Right. Or if you, like, actually help them,
mm-hmm.
to your point, they might join.
Maybe they'll become natural believers from seeing the power of Christ compel a demon out of someone.
Right. If that is, like, the biggest selling point, probably.
Right.
Like,
a lot of people don't believe just because they can't see it. You can physically see it. If you see someone get depossessed,
you just pluck that demon right out of her.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
I'm surprised churches don't just bring the whole congregation. They're like, obviously, God is here.
Right. That's an opportunity, and they're just wasting it away.
Yeah, for sure. The Warren's daughter, Judy, is attacked in the Warren home by Bathsheba. The Perrin family takes refuge at a motel, but Carolyn takes Christine and April back to the house to kill them.
And this is where it doesn't make sense, because Christine is the middle kid. April's the youngest. And the whole Bathsheba part is she kills, right? Because Christine's in the middle.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me, too. Like, why? Like, if she has the goal of killing the children,
mm-hmm.
why aren't you killing all your children? Like, you know, 5 for 5, you know, like a pretty good deal for a demon, I guess, that wants right. to kill babies.
Like, well, I think because in my mind, she was killing the youngest because they're like kids. Like the oldest one is like a teenager at this point.
Pretty much an adult, yeah.
Which is why I always thought it was weird that April and Christine, but now I'm second guessing, is Christine the second youngest? But I thought she was
middle too.
Me too. Well, in any case.
Maybe she is second youngest, but.
You know what Bathsheba did? She put their faces on the wall and just threw some darts.
Yeah.
And whichever ones it land on, that's the one she decided.
Yeah. Or maybe she was splitting them in half and she was going to come back for the other three after.
Yeah. I mean, 5 girls is a lot to take at one time. Right. So, you know, just.
You don't want to be overwhelmed.
Right. Yeah. That's probably what it was.
Right.
2 at a time.
Yeah. Bathsheba only had experience with 1 baby, 5 girls.
Yeah. That's cool.
Ed, Lorraine, and Brad find Carolyn in the cellar trying to stab Christine. Lorraine warns that if they take Carolyn outside the house, Bathsheba will kill her. And the whole time I was like, but where's fucking April? Like the whole time mm-hmm. I was like, can we still focus on what happened to the youngest kid though?
She was hiding. We find out.
I guess. Yeah.
But at the time,
she
was not there.
Everyone's like, yeah.
Christine. Well, Christine was in the more immediate danger at the time.
Yeah.
So I kind of get it. I guess
they assumed if like they had Bathsheba and Carolyn present, April was okay. They tie Carolyn to a chair, and Ed attempts the exorcism himself, though Carolyn escapes and attempts to kill April.
That's pretty lightly. She was hiding, like, under the kitchen?
Yeah, and then, like, in the floor?
Mm-hmm.
like I said, all roads in this house lead to the cellar.
They get down there.
So she's just like crawling through like a tunnel, basically, and trying to catch her.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Lorraine is able to call to her by reminding her of a special memory she shared with her family.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that part. So let's back up a second. So they were unpacking like pictures and it's them at the beach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Lorraine's like looking at this picture of them smiling at the beach. And she's like, oh, it must have been a special day. And Carolyn's like, yeah, how did you know? And I want to be like, because that's how a picture works. Like, she's looking at a picture. Like, she didn't need to see them happy at the beach.
Yeah.
To see that they're happy at the beach in the picture.
Charlie and I both were like, why wouldn't you fact check her? Why wouldn't she say something about, like, oh, what good hot dogs we had at the beach or something, you know? Or, you know, like, that the swimsuit you wore was pretty or whatever. Like, no, it has to be just what a fun day at the beach as a family stands in front of a beach.
Looking happy. It was just so funny because Karen's like, she must be clairvoyant. She knew we were happy at the beach by looking at the picture of us being happy at the beach. I just like,
how would she know that our family would travel to the beach and be happy?
The picture is them just crying.
Yes.
It's like, it must have been a really special day. And Carolyn's like, no.
Someone died and then we went to the beach.
We just got back from a funeral. Yeah. Like, hello.
Obviously.
Yes, they took a picture of a happy memory.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't tend to frame the sad, sad ones. Yeah, okay, so to this non-specific day at the beach, it allows Ed to complete the exorcism because, you know, Carolyn fights back against Bathsheba and they lift her curse and condemn her back to hell.
Bye.
Bye, bitch. Returning to his home, Ed adds the haunted music box from the parent home to their room of cursed artifacts that they have collected from the past cases. As he leaves, the music box starts playing on its own.
Yeah, we didn't even mention that.
Yeah, it was such a non-factor, honestly.
Right.
Yeah, so at first you think that April is like this really susceptible child to being like hurt by this demon or something like that. And she's playing with this music box, one of those ones that you wind up and it pops open. And apparently it's Rory. It's the boy of the mom that Bathsheba possessed and had her kill him. And I guess he's just like chilling there.
Yeah.
He's not really a threat, but it's made out to seem like he is at first, but not really.
Yeah. I mean, you see the ghosts of all these people like here and there that they don't really do much of anything.
Yeah.
The one jumps out to the, I think it's the cop one time.
Oh, it's like a servant. And she yeah. said that she made me do it or something.
Yeah. So there's like all these ghosts that don't really do anything. And then back to like non-factors, there was this whole like side thing with Annabelle and Ed and Lorraine's daughter.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost as if like the Conjuring was kind of like bleeding into their home kind of thing. Like just all of the psychic damage it was inflicting on the parents, I guess, of trying to deal with what was going on in the Conjuring was like transferring back. And Annabelle was being awakened by...
Oh, I think it was just completely separate.
The stirring. You know? Oh, you think it was?
Yeah, I think it was just like...
Just Annabelle
being Annabelle. Yeah, just Annabelle being Annabelle during this. Like, now's not the time.
Now's the time to act up.
Like, right. Get back in your cage. Or maybe, I don't know. It was just like so random. I think like they're just like setting it up for possibilities later.
I guess. I assume that it was something to do with the Conjuring going back to them because at one point their daughter comes to Lorraine and says that she found these blessed medallions at like a church market sale or something like that. And she put their pictures in them. So like they'd each have these lockets of each other. And I think when Lorraine falls through the house and sees the ghost in the cellar at one point, she loses it. And I thought the blessed medallion was kind of like keeping her safe until that moment. And then once the ghost or the house had it, they had access to her daughter.
Oh, shit.
I might be reading into it too far.
Somebody just connected those dots and I'm just like, this is separate. Just Annabelle being a bitch.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't know how long they've had Annabelle. Like, they could have had Annabelle since she was a baby and all of a sudden, you know.
Well, you said, so in the beginning, when we talked
Wait,
about.
Oh, yeah. What year was that?
You said like 3 years later.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah,
so they've had her in the house for a few years now. She's just all of a sudden like,
deuces.
Mom and dad's away.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it somehow like you said, just gave it more power.
Yeah.
To
because the little girl, April, gives Lorraine the medallion back at the end of the movie.
Yeah. Huh. Maybe. But yeah, there's like small things throughout that we didn't really talk about that really don't add up to anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's stuff like that.
Yeah. I guess when you have like this big series that spreads out amongst so many other movies, this would be like an Easter egg kind of moment, or, you know, maybe it's nothing. Maybe it does lead into everything. Maybe not.
Yeah. They were just setting it up. They knew. Because, yeah, they started off with Annabelle, and you're like, okay, Annabelle's definitely the...
the villain.
No.
The main guy.
Not yet.
Nah.
Are you ready to talk about the story of the real Perrin family?
Sure.
So, I got all my information from two articles. One from History vs. Hollywood about The Conjuring, and the other one was called The True Story of The Conjuring, The Perrin Family, and The Enfield Haunting. Which I don't talk about the Enfield Haunting because the second movie deals with that.
Oh, okay.
So this was just a bigger article just about the true stories from the Conjuring universe, but I only obviously cover the Perrin family part of that. So here we go. The Perrin family resided in a farmhouse in Harrisville, Rhode Island for around 10 years, beginning in 1970 when Roger and Carolyn Perrin purchased the 200-acre property to raise their five daughters, Andrea, Nancy, Christine, Cynthia, and April.
Okay.
So this is a direct quote from, I believe, Andrea Perrin. Eight generations of one extended family lived and died in the house prior to our arrival, said Andrea Perrin, adding, some of them never left. The Black Book of Burrillville, the town's former public records book, revealed that over the course of its existence, the property had been host to two suicides by hanging, one suicide by poison, the rape and murder of 11-year-old Prudence Arnold by a farmhand, two drownings, and the passing of four men who froze to death, in addition to other tragic losses of life.
Wow, it sounded like that house needed to be burned down.
Right? Get this out of here. Right. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Stop it.
The whole house says not for you.
If I heard any of that, I'd be like, no,
yeah,
never mind.
Yeah. Whenever you look at a house to buy, you just like, you always ask, how many people die here?
Hold on.
They should tell you.
I don't think they have to.
Yeah. I think in certain states they don't, but yeah, in certain places.
Now, Rhode Island. They're like, nothing happened here. This is great.
Rhode Island's very small. Nothing happens here.
Did I mention 200 acres?
Yeah.
That's like half the state. Rhode Island's tiny.
Ignore those gravestones.
There's like zombies and like ghosts. Yeah. Those are just the townsfolk. They're fine.
Very friendly.
So while living in the house, they started to experience paranormal activity. It started small. Carolyn would notice that the broom went missing, or it seemed to move from place to place on its own. She would hear the sound of something scraping against the kettle in the kitchen when no one was there. She'd find small piles of dirt in the center of a newly cleaned kitchen floor. The girls began to notice spirits around the house, though for the most part they were harmless. There were a few, however, that were angry. Andrea reported that her family encountered additional spirits with a putrid odor and the ability to levitate beds. She mentioned that her father would feel a chilling and foul presence behind him when entering the basement. Throughout the 10-year period of the family's residency in the house, Ed and Lorraine Warren conducted numerous investigations. Ed and Lorraine Warren were American paranormal investigators and authors associated with prominent cases of alleged hauntings. Edward was a self-taught and self-professed demonologist, author, and lecturer, while Lorraine professed to be a clairvoyant and a light trance medium who worked closely with her husband. In 1952, the Warrens founded the New England Society for Psychic Research, the oldest ghost hunting group in New England. At one point, Lorraine conducted a seance to attempt to contact the spirit that was possessing the family. During the seance, Carolyn Perrin became possessed, speaking in tongues and rising from the ground in her chair. They eventually left the farmhouse in June of 1980. The family supported the film based on their experiences and joined forces to endorse daughter Andrea Perrin's self-published book entitled House of Darkness, House of Light, which delves into their encounters. Some family members, including those acquainted with producer Tony DeRosa Grund, visited the film set in Wilmington, North Carolina. Although Andrea has been outspoken about their experiences, her sister Christine has been more reserved about it. As we covered in the plot, the film centers on the haunting spirit of Bathsheba Sherman, a suspected witch born as Bathsheba Thayer in 1812. She married Judson Sherman and lived as a housewife while Judson worked as a farmer. They had a son, Herbert L. Sherman, and possibly three other children who did not survive past the age of seven. Legend and local folklore suggested that Bathsheba was a witch, with suspicion arising when an infant in her care died under mysterious circumstances. While the townspeople believe she sacrificed the infant to the devil, insufficient evidence led to her being legally cleared of any wrongdoing, though the public remained unconvinced. In Andrea's book, again titled House of Darkness, House of Light, Andrea recounts her mother Carolyn's conversation with a local historian named Mr. McEachern, who claimed that Bathsheba mistreated and abused her farm staff. Contrary to various online articles, there was no evidence to support the claims that Bathsheba's body literally turned into stone upon her death, or that she suffered from a bizarre form of paralysis that puzzled doctors. So there's like a theory she just like turned to stone.
Oh, okay.
When she died.
Yeah, you know how witches do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But obviously there's no record of that actually happening. So this is all like... But in the area, Bathsheba is known
as this
potential witch.
Damn. All right.
So now I had asked the question, well, how did they know that this was Bathsheba specifically?
Mm-hmm.
And that one article did kind of mention a loose connection, I feel.
Oh.
But Carolyn Perrin recounted an unsettling incident to Ed and Lorraine where she experienced a sudden intense pain in her calf while lying on the sofa, followed by muscle spasms and the discovery of a puddle of blood. Despite thorough examination, she found no explanation for the puncture other than a perfectly concentric circle described by her daughter as resembling a large sewing needle impaling her skin. Upon hearing this account alongside the infamous tale of Bathsheba Sherman, who was rumored to have used a knitting needle to harm an infant, Lorraine speculated that Bathsheba could have carried the needle into the afterlife and used it to inflict harm on Carolyn.
Oh boy.
So like, it must have been that.
Yeah.
It was definitely Bathsheba.
Right, for sure.
It was definitely a sewing
Nothing
needle.
Else.
Nothing else. And then a little bit about some people who live there after. Andrea Perrin stated, everyone who has lived in the house that we know of has experienced this, meaning a bunch of paranormal activity.
Yeah.
Some have left screaming and running for their lives. The man who moved in to begin the restoration on the house when we sold it left screaming without his car, without his tools, without his clothing.
Damn.
I know. He's like, bye. I gotta go. He never went back to the house, and consequently, the people who owned it, the adjacent landowners, never moved in, and it sat vacant for years.
Oh, boy.
So that's some information on the real-life story, which sounds pretty accurate to the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure, like, all that shit. Like, how much do we believe that that happened, you know?
Yeah, turning to stone and everything. I mean, also, there is the whole, if when you sell a house, you're like, by the way, super haunted, everyone's going to go in and be like, okay, super haunted.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, even if they're skeptical, they're going to be like, yeah, but they said it was haunted kind of thing. So, like, even if it's not, it's, like, in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
So, if every creek is going to be haunting, like, not saying that they didn't see stuff. I'm sure they did, but.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
I feel like it's also more likely to happen to you if you're open or, you know, suspecting it to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like if you plant that seed. Like, mm-hmm. if you don't say anything at all.
Yeah,
like, right. Not gonna happen. I wonder if they did tell him, like, by the way, the house is haunted as fuck. Like, don't actually buy it.
And with the coat, like, left without his car, without his tools, without his clothing. It just reminded me of that TikTok, like, her eyes were gone. Her nose was gone.
I don't think I know that TikTok.
It's the TikTok about, like, how girls are scared of everything except watching true crime. They just eat it like popcorn.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're just like, ooh.
This is fun.
Yes.
Oh, that's funny. But I would suspect that it was haunted to some degree. I don't know that.
It was this intense.
Yeah, that intense. But
yeah.
Maybe. Maybe it was. Who knows? But based on what I found, it sounded very similar to the actual plot of the movie.
Yeah.
And there's, you can see the actual pictures of, like, the family, too, and all that stuff.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I like that.
Oh, yeah, it's in the end of the movie.
Yeah, helps seal the deal.
Yeah, it's real, I promise.
Yes. This couple has 5 daughters.
Yeah, that's the scariest part. Oh, my God.
You should have stopped at 3.
So before we wrap up this episode, we are not doing a
season recap.
Yes, a season recap. But because the podcast is changing format a little bit, you'll learn more on our social media a little bit. It's probably going to be released by the time this episode comes out.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a little video explaining like what's going on. But we still wanted to wrap up the season a little bit and just talk about our favorite and least favorite movies from the season.
Yeah. So obviously my favorite is Midsommar, and Midsommar. I was pretty open about how that was my favorite as well when we did the movie. It did not change my mind with the other movies. I mean, I guess Get Out and stuff are still very good as well, but I guess those would be like top two.
Top two.
And then Changeling was my least favorite. Oh. Just wasn't for me.
Yeah, that's fair.
How about you?
So my favorite was Scream, Forever and Always. Just one of my favorite horror movies of all time.
I did have a lot of fun watching it, so it was up there.
It's up there. Top half?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, cool.
Maybe even top third.
Ooh, okay. I'll take it. Yeah. I'll take it. So Scream is one of my favorites. What else did I like a lot? I mean, of course, I like The Strangers. I would say, yeah, probably Strangers would be two. Get Out's good. Midsommar's good. We had a lot of good ones this time.
Yeah.
So picking my least favorite was, again, probably The Changeling. Not that it was a bad movie, per se. It just wasn't my cup of tea.
Yeah.
Wasn't my favorite thing.
I think we were just given the wrong impression on what was going to be going on.
That was you. You were like, that's not a changeling.
No. Well, you name it The Changeling and there's actually creature changelings. Like, no. This is just you coming up with a fun metaphor for what's happening.
Yeah. Okay. You're like, don't even try to justify this.
No. I was just
That's meh. Fair. Yeah. They're all pretty good.
What was the most surprising that you liked out of them, I guess?
I guess I was surprised I liked Skinamarink as much as I did.
Really?
I was kind of afraid I was going to find it boring, and it did freak me out. Again, after the fact, I talked about how, like, when I was doing research on it in the middle of the night, I was, like, looking behind me every 5 seconds. I'm like, oh, I'm scared. So that actually affected me a lot more than I thought.
Yeah.
Everything else I think I've seen before outside of The Changeling.
Okay.
Yeah, I literally have seen everything else, so no surprises elsewhere.
I would say, personally, The Exorcist was the most surprising to me, just because, like, I thought I had gone in knowing, like, enough about it that it wouldn't surprise me or shock me. Like they didn't hold back.
Surprise. Like, this is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. No surprises. I think revisiting some of these movies I haven't seen in a long time was exciting, like The Mummy.
Yeah.
Love that. Fun. I think I talked about it in the actual episode, but I kind of wasn't like a huge fan of Sleepy Hollow at first, but like watching it again, I was like, oh, this is good. This is fun. So I had a good time. This was a really good season. I think this is consistently the best group of movies we've done.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. So we're not going to go into specifics, but the reason we liked this season so much is because there was a lot of recommendations from people. So what we're doing might lean a little bit more towards that kind of
format. I would say it definitely gave us a lot more opportunities to explore other topics outside of our normal. Like, here's our one category, 13 episodes on one category.
Yeah. There's only so many technology terror.
Which is why we had an episode on prosthetics.
Yeah, you know, everyone needs to know about that.
Sports medicine, let's do it.
Let's go. New podcast. About sports medicine. Yeah. Just a whole new podcast.
Yes, for sure.
No more scary movies.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show and listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, giving us a 5-star rating is super helpful, and we always appreciate it.
Yes, and don't forget that you can now comment on our episodes on Spotify, and we would love to hear from you. Additionally, you can find us on social media using 13 Degrees of Screams.
This has been 13 Degrees of Screams, and we will see you next week.
Bye!
No song? Oh my God.
Witchcraft.
You just said witchcraft.
I put a spell on.
Well, if we do Hocus Pocus.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, there's songs in Hocus Pocus, but we could do it again. I was just thinking, because witch. I don't know.